Good day. My name is Maureen. I'll be reading the Iroquois Times-Republic for the week of November 21st, 2024. The headline article on the top of the front page is "Some April 1st Candidates File in Iroquois County Clerk's Office." Several people have filed to run in the consolidated election on April 1st, 2025. Some have filed in the Iroquois County Clerk's Office, and some have filed with various clerks around the county. Iroquois County Clerk Brienne Suver said that her office will begin receiving ballot certifications from the clerks after the objection period is over, which is November 25th. The earliest her office can accept the different ballot certifications is November 26, which is when they will confirm the names of the candidates who will appear on the ballot. Those who filed in the Iroquois County Clerk's office are multi-township assessor Lovejoy Prairie, Green Milford Stockland, Bridget Schroeder Ashcom, Chavance Milks Grove, Daniel Schultz for school board. And then it continues on with a long list of candidates who have filed. Just under that article is a brief article mentioning that Watseka candidates also filed. Of interest is the candidates who will be on the ballot are Mayor Benny Marcier and J. Scott Anderson, and Treasurer Glenda Carlson Clerk. I believe that's all. Thank you. The last Paint Your Path 5K Run Walk was conducted in Watseka November 17th. This event by the Brave Warriors Foundation, the runs have been conducted through the years to raise money for the students in the Unit 9 school district. After beloved teacher Brent McTaggart passed away in an automobile accident in 2013, his family started the foundation and the run. Children, Kennedy, Drew, and Addison, and mom, Casey, along with some volunteers, organized the events and distributed the scholarships. The 5K run walk has not happened every year, but Drew's class of 2025 has always been a sponsor, and the family wanted to have one last event. There were 250 participants in the November 17th event that also included a balloon launch and a chance for people to write a note and attach it to the balloon to send it on to someone they have lost. Michael Cabe spoke at the event about the many projects that have benefited from the run and the foundation through the years. It's rare for a local 5K to draw nearly 250 participants after 12 years, and that's a true testament to our shared commitment to one another. Before we begin, let us take a moment to remember those we've lost. Their memories live on in our hearts and continue to inspire us every day. This year, the money raised will go to Unit 9's Blessings in a Backpack program. The program provides essential weekend meals for 85 elementary students, funded entirely by generous donations. The Iroquois County community has rallied around a Watseka firefighter who is fighting cancer. A bingo benefit for Dakota Schroeder was conducted November 16th at the Watseka Elks Lodge. Along with bingo, there were many items for either a raffle or silent auction. "I would add a huge thank you to everyone who came out and made the event what it was," said Brittany Schroeder, one of the organizers. "I want to thank everyone who donated the 50-plus baskets we had to raffle off and use in our silent auction." Modern Woodman Susan Cross was there and matched up to $2,500. The Red Line Riders and the Street Line Riders donated $300 each. According to information provided, Dakota was 9 when he was first diagnosed with a brain tumor. At that time, doctors removed the tumor, which was benign. At age 14, another tumor was discovered, which again was removed and found to be benign. He soon recovered and was able to get back on the football field. He played all 4 years of football and graduated from high school. He continued to be monitored by the doctors and was able to fulfill a dream of joining the Watseka Fire Department. On August 31st, he became confused and did not know what was going on around him. He was taken to the hospital where another tumor was discovered. This third tumor was larger and more aggressive than the ones before. Doctors removed a golf ball-sized tumor and he began his recovery. The doctors are now treating the tumor as if it is cancer, and Dakota has been undergoing chemo and radiation. In spite of his treatments, he was able to attend the November 16th benefit, and he was amazed for all the people who came together for him. Brittany said that Dakota is continuing to fight and get on with his life. He and fiancé Ashley Langlier have been planning for their wedding, and he is fighting to get well and return to work. The Unit 9 Academic Foundation conducted its annual Warrior Pride event night, November 14th. This event is conducted each year to honor students in many ways and to raise money for foundation projects. This year, the proceeds will go towards the foundation goal of funding new desks for classrooms in the district. The goal is $20,000. Starting the evening off with the GRS students who say, "Sir Duke," led by director Jessica Phaland, the Watsika Community High School Concert Choir sang the Star Spangled Banner, led by director Grace Kim. The Marching Warriors were honored because of their successful marching seasons. Perze said the band performed Seasons of Change at all home football games and 5 competitions. The obituary section begins with Nancy Ann Cole, C-O-L-E, 85 years of age, who died November 5th. A private memorial service for Nancy and Jim will be held at a later date. Condolences may be sent to the Flanner Buchanan online guest book. Consider making a donation to a favorite charity in honor of Nancy and Jim Cole. Her obituary mentions that her husband, Jim Cole, passed away in 2021. Eugene Kokanower, C-O-C-A-N-O-W-E-R, who went by the name Gene, 68 years of age, of Monticello, died Saturday, November 16th. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Alzheimer's Association or the Humane Society Animal Shelter for Greater Lafayette. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Carol J. Gourley, G-O-U-R-L-E-Y, 81 years of age, of Monticello, passed away on November 16th. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3 on Thursday, November 21st, at Hip and Steel Funeral Home. Funeral services will follow at 3 p.m. Share memories online. Elizabeth Ann Perry Frederick, 74 years of age, of DeMott, passed away November 15th. Family and friends may visit at Jackson Funeral Service of DeMott for a celebration of life on Saturday, November 23rd, from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Memorials may be made in Ann's name to the United Methodist Committee on Relief or the Indiana Coalition for Public Education. James L. Tungate, T-U-N-G-A-T-E, 77 years of age, of Cisna Park, passed away November 15th. Visitation will be Friday, November 22nd, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. Masonic rites will be conducted by the Watsika Masonic Lodge at 7 p.m. following the visitation. Private funeral services and burial will be at a later date at Sugar Creek Cemetery in Stockland. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Watsika Masonic Lodge, American Red Cross, or any local food pantry. Edward Samuel Wyss, W-Y-S-S, 92 years of age, formerly of Princeville and Watsika, passed away November 16th in Rockford. Private burial was at the Princeville Township Cemetery. A celebration of life for relatives and friends will be held on Saturday, November 30th at 1 p.m. at the Fairhaven Christian Retirement Center in Rockford. In lieu of flowers, a family request memorial contributions may be made at the memorial service or online to Billy Graham Evangelistic Association or Fairhaven Christians Retirement Center. Stephanie K. Stanton Kendall, her last name is hyphenated, Stanton Kendall, 62 years of age, of Kentland, passed away Thursday, November 8th. Visitation will take place on Saturday, November 23rd at Covenant Federated Church in Kentland, beginning at 10:30. A memorial service will begin at noon, also at the church, with a luncheon following the service. Loretta E. Roe, R-O-E, 91 years of age, of Goodland, passed away November 17th. Visitation will be held from noon to 1 Central Time, Tuesday, November 26th, with funeral service to follow at the funeral home. The family notes that upon mom's request, please wear casual attire to the service and be comfortable. A procession to Goodland Cemetery will follow the funeral service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Goodland Volunteer Fire Department. The first winter farmers market in Watsika was November 16th. The event was at the Homestead venue from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. The organizer stated the events will take place once a month, the third Saturday of the month, during the winter. There were 14 vendors at this November 16th event. A birth announcement. Jeff and Kim Redenius, R-E-D-E-N-I-U-S, of Ashcombe, are proud to announce the arrival of their third child, a son. Marcus Cole was born on Sunday, November 3rd. He weighed 8 pounds 5 ounces, 21 inches long. He is welcomed home by big brothers Derek and Trace. The Donovan United Methodist Church will celebrate its Swedish heritage at 10:30 a.m. December 15th. The congregation will honor St. Lucia as she makes her appearance at the beginning of the service. They will honor their Swedish families. They share their heritage during the service. Coffee and Swedish foods will be served after the celebration of worship. Everyone is welcome to attend. In the Lifestyles section is an article titled, How Hoosiers Can Take Control of Their Health During National Diabetes Month. From the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare of Indiana, November is National Diabetes Month, an excellent time to assess our health, weight, and diets, especially as the holidays approach and many of us look forward to family feasts and Thanksgiving desserts. Type 2 diabetes and obesity are closely related conditions. In fact, these conditions are present together so often that the new medical term, diabesity, has been used to describe what's becoming a worldwide epidemic, according to the Cleveland Clinic. This is partly because someone who is obese is 6 times more likely to develop type 2 diabetes. Up to 53% of new type 2 diabetics diagnosed over the last 2 decades have been linked to obesity, according to the American Heart Association. A 2023 study revealed increases in the prevalence of diabetes and obesity among U.S. adults ages 20 to 44. Obesity is now a chronic disease that affects more than 42% of American adults nationally, while in Indiana, 37.7% of individuals have obesity. Some tips to help you take control of your health by reducing risk factors for obesity or diabetes include: talk to your employer about programs that may be available to you. Autumn is open enrollment season, the time frame when people are considering their options for health benefits for the following year. Some employer-sponsored health plans now offer programs that can help people with type 2 diabetes improve their condition and even work towards remission, as well as programs that help support people on their weight loss journey. The second action is to focus on a whole-person approach to better health. Weight loss journeys that start with a whole-person approach can be more effective at treating all aspects of a person's health. Pharmaceuticals like GLP-1s are one option for treating type 2 diabetes and obesity. While these medications hold promise for treating obesity, experts agree that in accordance with the FDA's label, they should be used together with the reduced calorie diet and increased physical activity. Individuals who take these drugs are more successful at achieving and maintaining their weight loss goals when they are part of a comprehensive lifestyle management program. Talk to your employer about what benefits and programs may be available to you. The third action is to focus on habits to maintain a healthy lifestyle, including lean proteins in your diet and lots of nutrient-rich vegetables. It's recommended that adults get at least 150 minutes a week of moderate intense activity, such as brisk walking. The next action is to talk to your doctor and set up routine visits with a healthcare professional to properly monitor and maintain your health. Regularly scheduled physical exams are essential to take care of your well-being. A story also from the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Most local governments have not started spending their opioid settlement dollars, according to a state report presented on Thursday. Four towns failed to meet deadlines for reporting spending, leaving 644 localities in the analysis. Of those, 80% have not spent any of their restricted funds, while 82% have not dipped into their unrestricted accounts. Shelby Thomas, the Deputy Director for Drug Prevention, Treatment, and Enforcement under the Governor of Indiana, states, as these record amounts of funds continue to flow into Indiana, the role of locals is vital. With that in mind, we've developed guidance for communities to consider as they look to submit their restricted funds. Also included in this document is a list of tangible items that are not included as an allowable expense, as well as resources for those communities. The Family and Social Services Administration, the agency tasked with tracking such spending, presented the findings before the Indiana Commission to Combat Substance Use Disorder. Over 18 years, the state as a whole is on track to receive more than $980 million as part of a national settlement with opioid distributors, manufacturers, and marketers, with funds designated to combat substance and opioid use disorder. Total funds will be split 50-50 between the state and local units of government. Overall, 30% of the money, or 15% for each level of government, will be directed to unrestricted funds. The state and locals can spend it however they see fit. The state, on the other hand, is moving more quickly. As of October 1st, FSSA reported that it had committed to spending more than $40 million in restricted funds. Such spending is directed toward programs such as building recovery residences, street outreach, or hiring peer support specialists. Earlier this year, the CDC and Prevention had good news. Overdose deaths around the country had fallen by 3%, the first drop since 2018. In Indiana, the drop was even bigger, falling 18%. Still, over 2,000 Hoosiers died by overdose in 2023, and thousands of others are battling addiction. An article from the capital of Illinois, Capital News. A state pilot program designed to erase medical debt for 300,000 Illinois residents has already helped thousands eliminate $72 million of debt, the governor's office announced November 14th. The Medical Debt Relief Pilot Program launched on July 1st, the start of the state's 2025 fiscal year. Since then, it has erased debt for 52,745 residents. Residents whose debt has been forgiven so far will receive letters in the mail next week notifying them. Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement, "The Illinois Medical Debt Relief Pilot Program represents a promise to help families focus on health and recovery without the weight of financial strain. We are just getting started, and my administration remains dedicated to bringing this relief to vulnerable communities across the state." Lawmakers approved $10 million in this year's budget with the goal of eliminating $1 billion worth of medical debt. The state is partnering with the nonprofit Undo Medical Debt, which can buy debt from collection agencies, hospitals, and similar entities for just a few cents on the dollar. Every $1 collected translates into $100 of debt relief by the nonprofit, which partners with governments on debt forgiveness programs. Brushing off concerns of overspending, Pritzker signs $53 billion state budget. The state's pilot program is modeled off a Cook County program where the county used $12 million of American Rescue Plan Act funds to forgive debt in partnership with the same nonprofit. Thus far, the program has received $382 million of medical debt for 213,000 qualifying county residents. The average debt that was forgiven was only $1,349, according to the governor's office, though there was one as high as $242,000. Illinoisans must meet certain qualifications to be eligible for the program. Back to Indiana now, a story regarding state taxes. Indiana's revenues are down as tax collections continue to lag behind estimates, according to November's state revenue report. Projections are based on analysis from December 2023 and due for an update next month. Last year, estimates put revenues at nearly $6.6 billion, or $243 million more than the actual year-to-date revenues, which total around $6.4 billion. That number is also 3.1% less than what Indiana had in its coffers the year before. Collections have fallen nearly across the board, including sales taxes, individual income taxes, and corporate taxes. Sales taxes missed the mark by $68 million, totaling $3.5 billion, while individual income taxes came in $121 million lower than expected. Sales taxes were still slightly higher by $41 million than the year before. One revenue source was unexpectedly high, offsetting the above numbers. High interest rates, which are controlled at the federal level, continued to boost Indiana's bottom line. Rather than the expected $125 million return, Indiana received nearly $204 million, or $78 million more than expected. Riverboat betting was also slightly higher than anticipated, returning $1.5 million more than the expected $3.8 million, for a total of $5.3 million. In agricultural news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture today announced the selection of 27 new members to its Task Force on Agricultural Air Quality Research. According to information from the USDA, the task force examines the intersection of agricultural production and air quality and advises the secretary on scientifically sound, cost-effective, federally supported agricultural solutions that can help improve air quality. The task force members are from diverse backgrounds, including agricultural producers, agricultural industry representatives, researchers, scientists, and members of health and regulatory organizations who have an interest and expertise with agriculture air quality issues. The newly selected members will serve a term of up to 2 years. The focus areas of the task force may include providing recommendations for needed research, ensuring that implementation of USDA practices, programs, and research for air quality and climate change promote environmental justice goals and explore opportunities for improvement, addressing reactive nitrogen emissions, including ammonia, from agricultural sources, especially in relation to nitrogen deposition, greenhouse gas impact, and ammonia's role as a precursor to fine particulate matter formation, discussing agricultural greenhouse gas and carbon sequestration topics, providing guidance and recommendations to the Secretary regarding the impact on agriculture from U.S. EPA rules and research, discussing state and local air quality regulations, and the potential impact on agricultural operations in those areas. Chaired by the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief, this is the 12th task force since its launch in 1997. Article titled, In the Garden, Safe Burning. If there is one certainty for all humans, it's that we are drawn to natural elements. Two of the best examples are how we can become transfixed when looking at fire or water. Scientists have studied this effect and shown that our brains reduce stress chemicals when we are staring at fire, water, or plants. This must be why a widespread tradition as the weather cools is to invite friends over to sit around a fire. It is bonfire season. Surveying middle-aged dads in my immediate surroundings, we all agree that fires are great. More so, it seems like a fire brings everyone out. With fires, young kids are like moths to a flame. My wife enjoys finding fall-themed and mixed drinks to sip around a fire. What is in an apple pie cocktail. I don't know, but it was delicious. I've even seen a bonfire bring out the reclusive teenager to sit and socialize with the family. It's like magic. In the Midwest, sharing firewood is common. If someone cuts down a tree, they often offer the extra firewood to friends. However, there are important considerations when sharing firewood. What species of tree was it? Did it die from a disease that can spread? I thought this article was going to be about mixed drink recipes to be enjoyed around a bonfire. Time for me to toss a wet blanket on your bonfire dreams. Moving firewood very often can result in the movement of tree pests and diseases. Let's look at a northern red oak, Quercus rubra, recently cut down after it died from a disease known as oak wilt. Oak wilt is caused by the fungus Bretzelia fagicarum, and it leads to the rapid death of oak species in the red oak group. Often within a year, an oak will go from healthy to dead. Old species in the white oak group can also be infected, but the disease progresses much slower in these trees. I've seen a significant rise in oak trees dying from oak wilt in the McDonough County area. These trees are often massive, mature shade trees, leaving behind piles of wood and debris after the chainsaw is silenced. However, the oak wilt fungus is not dead, even in the cut wood. In red oak species, such as northern red oak, pin oak, scarlet oak, and more, a fungal mat develops beneath the bark. If an infected oak tree is cut in the fall, by next spring, the stacked firewood is teeming with the oak wilt fungus, waiting for an insect to come and spread it to other nearby oak trees. Recently, I have seen oaks succumb to oak wilt and then firewood from those trees shared across the community, further ensuring the spread of oak wilt. While we're still reeling from emerald ash borer, it's important to note that this pest spreads so well because of rapid moving firewood. And there is more than EAB and oak wilt. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources notes there are 140 known pests and pathogens that can spread in firewood. This all leads to Illinois Extension's recommendations to not move firewood. Not all of us have a forest in our backyard to harvest firewood, so what's suggested for those who need to purchase firewood for their backyard weenie roast? Buy firewood locally, ideally less than 50 miles away. Ensure firewood is debarked, heat-treated, or kiln-dried. Don't transport firewood to second locations like summer houses or campgrounds. Burn firewood where you buy it. Debarking is the removal of all bark and the outermost half inch of wood. Debarking is the least effective option because some pathogens and insects are not affected by this treatment. Heat treatment or kiln drying are considered the most effective means. A brief note about Medicare. If you're enrolled in Medicare, it's important to remember Medicare open enrollment runs from October 15th through December 7th. This is the time for people with Medicare to compare their prescription drug and health coverage options for the upcoming year. The new prescription drug law is lowering out-of-pocket costs on covered prescriptions. New in 2025, all Medicare plans will include a $2,000 annual cap on what you pay out of pocket for prescription drugs under Medicare Part D. The cap only applies to drugs that are covered by your plan, so it's more important than ever to review your plan options to make sure that your drugs are covered. The other improvements in this law included a $35 cap on a month's supply of each covered insulin product and no out-of-pocket costs for recommended adult vaccines covered under Part D, including the shingles vaccine. If you are happy with your current choice, you don't have to do anything. If you choose a new option for 2025, you can enroll on Medicare.gov. At that site, you can find side-by-side comparisons of cost and coverages and phone numbers for 24-hour help. Thank you so much for listening to this week's edition. We will be back next week. Thank you.